God.
Grant me the serenity.
To accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA Simple Actions. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, and neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step one, part two. Please welcome our panel this evening. We've got Gail from Portsmouth and Ethan from here our own Simple Actions. I will read the first paragraph from page five of the big book, and then both members of our panel will share for a few minutes on the reading. I woke up. This had to be stopped. I saw I could not take so much as one drink. I was through forever. Before then, I had written lots of sweet promises, but my wife happily observed that this time I meant business, and so I did. Shortly afterward, I came home drunk. There had been no fight. Where had been my high resolve? I simply didn't know. It hadn't even come to mind.
No.
Someone had pushed a drink my way, and I had taken it.
No.
Was I crazy? I began to wonder, for such an appalling lack of perspective seemed near being just that. Renewing my resolve, I tried again.
Yeah.
Some time passed, and confidence began to be replaced by cocksureness. I could laugh at the gin mills. Now I had what it takes. I
have to put you in the crate.
One day I walked into a cafe to telephone. In no time, I was beating on the bar, asking myself how it happened. As the whiskey rose to my head, I told myself I would manage better next time, but I might as well get good and drunk then. And I did. Gail?
Hi, family. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Gail. Thank you, Ryan, for allowing me to be of service at this group tonight. My sobriety date is July 18th. I do that every time. July 22nd, 2018. And I guess we'll just get right to it. This part of step one is no coincidence that I was asked to be here tonight, because this is the part that took me the longest to get. I understood the allergy pretty quickly. You know, when I put alcohol in my system, I didn't know what was going to happen. You know, I would intend to drink one or two, and I had to drink till I passed out or ran out, whatever came first. So that I understood that. My body doesn't react normally to alcohol. The part that I didn't get was this second part, the unmanageability. I thought as long as I had a desire not to drink, that I wouldn't drink. I didn't know that I had to drink. I didn't understand what it meant when you guys said that I had lost the power of choice and drink. Again, as long as I thought as long as I didn't want to drink, and I went to meetings and I called my sponsor and I did my best to talk to you guys, that I wouldn't drink. sometimes, and I would make the promises, you know, I'd make the promises, you know, to my children. I would look them right in the eyes and say, I'm not going to do this again. You know, this is the last time. And the next day I would, you know, by 2 o'clock be pounding, you know, like, how did this happen again? The part about I could laugh at the gin mills. So when I learned about the allergy, I was like, okay, I get it now. Like, I'm not going to put it in my body. And I remember thinking, I've got this, you know, I don't want to drink. And it's, and he says that he would laugh at the gin mills. I remember driving by the 7-Elevens and flipping them off. Like, you don't have me. And then I would go in there to, you know, get gas or whatever. And there would be a sale on the wine, you know, buy two, get one or whatever. And then I would just say, okay, this is going to be the last time, so I might as well just get good and mess up. And I did. Yes.
Thank you, Gail. I'm Ethan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
and I just want to start by saying I'm grateful to be here. Any opportunity I get to show up for A, it's always an honor. And thank you, everyone. My sobriety date is May 1st, 2019. I have a sponsor that knows he's my sponsor the good majority of the time. He has a sponsor and so on and so forth. He's taken me through this book and he's taken me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a home group. It is this group, Simple Actions. I have a service position as well. And I say all that not to say, like, look at me, I'm such a good AA, I'm doing all this stuff. I say that to help identify as an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous and help identify as a real alcoholic. Because when I came into this program, I had no idea what it meant to be a real alcoholic. You know, when people are talking about the mental obsession or the allergy, I had no idea what they were talking about. All I knew is all I wanted to do was just stop drinking. You know, not even for good. I just want to stop drinking just for a few days so I could dry out and things will get better. You know, when I came into AA, I had no intentions of completely stopping. I had no intentions of not doing the other things that helped bring me into this room as well, too. I'm like, alcohol is my problem. You know, like, these people will show me how to drink responsibly or drink with no consequences. And very quickly, as a lot of y'all realize, like, no, like, that's not what's going on. You know, but what did happen for me at my first meeting is I started hearing people talking about things that I could relate to, that I was drinking over, you know, days, weeks, months ago. And they seemingly are just talking about it so openly and so freely, laughing about it. And to me, it's like they got their shit together, you know, and I'm like, I was just so perplexed. I had no idea what was going on, but I knew, like, there had to have been something going on here. And these paragraphs, like, I remember reading these paragraphs specifically, sitting in jail, like, paranoid, like, how the fuck do these people know that this is me, you know? Because the thing is, for me, I got to a point where I didn't really have a lot of family members or loved ones that were telling me, like, how awful things were getting, because I did isolate myself so well from them. But I know for me, like, every morning I'd wake up saying, like, this is it. Like, you know, I was already upset that I was waking up and I was still alive. And I didn't drink myself to death tonight, because all I wanted to do by the end of my drinking was just stop drinking. Just wanted a few days, you know, just a few days off. And I realized very quickly, because there were so many times where I would be at the bar, I'd tell myself, I'm just going to have a couple drinks. Next thing you know, I'm, you know, upset. I'm like, well, next time will be different. And I got to a point where towards the end of my drinking, I just stopped trying to stop, because for whatever reason, I didn't know why, I just could not do it. I couldn't make it more than 2 days without drinking, because it would be, for me, it'd be one thing of, like, something's going wrong in my life and I got to drink, or today was a great day, I'm feeling great, work was awesome, I got to go home early and now I got to drink, you know, to celebrate. It didn't matter. It always ended up with me waking up the next morning just upset that I was still alive and upset that I still gave it all. And I had no idea what was going on until I came into these rooms and I started reading this book with my sponsor, and they started explaining that mental obsession, you know, the allergy to me, like, even that, they helped explain the allergy. So when I start, I can't stop. You know, once I put alcohol inside of me, that allergy kicks in, and that phenomenon of craving kicks in, and I'm off to the races. But even when I stop, no matter how long it's been, after a while, I have this mental obsession that's going to get me drunk. I'm going to find some way or some reason why I need to drink, whether it's good or bad. There's going to be something my mind's going to constantly try to get me. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Right, section 2 from page 7. It relieved me somewhat to learn that an alcoholic's the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor. though it often remains strong in other respects. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Understanding myself now, I fared forth in high hope. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high. I went to town regularly and even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge.
Thank you. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Gail. Do I do that every time?
You
don't
have to.
I don't have to. Okay. Just say she forgot. yeah. So again, like I just did not get it. I knew that I wanted to feel better. I knew that I felt like I just couldn't get my together, like you said. And I knew that somehow I needed to not drink as much. I honest to goodness, it took me a long time to understand that I had to drink. Like if I'm a real alcoholic, I have to drink unless I have another solution. There were times, you know, when I would hit somewhat of a bottom and I would go to a few meetings and I would listen. I wouldn't follow any directions. And again, I went to detox and I didn't know that I was in detox. I didn't understand that that's what I was there for. I had woken up after getting to the bottom of a bottle of pills and a bottle of rum, and I didn't know what day it was. And I wasn't sure if I went back to sleep, if I was going to wake up. So I ended up in detox. And that was when it was suggested that maybe I go to a meeting and that I go to this program that, come to find out, was IOP. I didn't know that it was IOP. I thought I was just, it's so funny to realize now that I think it was like 4 nights a week that I was going to this program. I was not like the people in the program. I just wanted to stop wanting to die, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought if, you know, most people that were in this program were court ordered to be there. So I definitely wasn't like that, right? And on Wednesday nights, they went to an AA meeting. So I didn't go on Wednesday nights because I wasn't an alcoholic or a drug addict. Like I honest to goodness did not get it. And now I look back at that and I was sober a couple of years before it washed over me that I was in IOP. I would, talk to women or sponsor women that would ask me questions about IOP. And I would say, and that's intensive outpatient if you haven't had that experience or you don't remember that you had that experience yet. It wasn't that I didn't remember. Like I remember the experience, but I didn't connect that that's what it was. And I would tell, these women that would ask me questions, you know, should I just go to AA? Should I do the intensive outpatient? I would say, well, I don't have experience with that. And I was in the middle of saying that sentence when it washed over me. Like I was in detox and didn't know I was in detox. I was an intensive outpatient and didn't know. So who else goes to detox and intensive outpatient if they don't have a problem with alcohol? But that was in 2014. And as I shared, my sobriety date is not until 2018. So I was a little slow learner. I think I'll pass there. Thanks.
Thank you. For me, once again, when I read Bill's story, like what I said, I was sitting in jail. And it's so funny because the jail I was sitting in, I was telling people towards the end of my drinking at the bar I used to drink with all the people I grew up with, went to high school with, that I could not wait to go to. And they're looking at me like I'm crazy. And then they ask me, they ask the question, what are you talking about, Ethan? Why are you excited to go to jail? I mean, I'm telling people like, it's like Disneyland. Like I was comparing it to Disneyland, like it was going to be a vacation. And then I tell them that I just want to stop drinking. I just need a break from drinking. And then they look at me even more crazy because as I'm saying that, I'm throwing my drink. And I ended up, when I went to jail, I ended up finding this book inside the medical unit. And it was the only book that I saw for like a week and a half. It was a hardcover book. Like even the fact that it was there was a spiritual experience once I got further into the program. But I remember reading this part as well too. And I could relate to it because for me, like the unmanageability, the powerlessness was already hard enough to look at because I'm thinking like, how can I be powerless to alcohol when it gives me so much power? You know, it brings me so much relief. It brings me so much ease and comfort. And that was the thing, like for a long time, that's exactly what alcohol did. But then just like the paragraphs before that we didn't read that we read last week, you know, it ceased to be a luxury. You know, I needed to drink. It wasn't a choice anymore. And it stopped working. It stopped bringing me that ease and comfort, which it used to do. And so it was already hard enough to look at the first part of step one, but then the second part of step one, like that my life is unmanageable. Because the thing is, like, when I put it on paper today and I look back, like my life is pretty fucking unmanageable. I was crashing cars, I was getting arrested, I was having guns pulled on me, my house was getting shot up, like my sister's having to evict me because I'm not paying her rent. You know, like I'm losing jobs. But the thing is, though, I wasn't focusing on that. I'm looking at, like, I'm not dead. You know, I have a car still. I have multiple jobs. You know, these jobs, they're asking me to come back, you know, as long as I just don't drink as much, or I can still drink. I just have to show up on time. They're trying to give me raises. They're trying to do this, you know, and like the external things were never a factor of like, there's something going wrong. The only thing that pushed me was that fact, like I could not wait to go to jail. And every morning I was upset that I was still alive. So when I read this, it really gave me some confidence. And then like, I stopped reading it, like self-knowledge, like that's it. And I'm like, yes, this is it. Self-knowledge, you know, and then you read further. And it's like, that's not it. That's not enough. Self-knowledge is not enough, because with this mental obsession, I'm going to forget about the horrors of a day, a week, or even months ago. I'm going to forget how desperate I am or how desperate I was, or I might not even forget. It might not even be a thing. It's just like, I have this obsession. You know, I have this thing inside of me that whether or not things are going good or bad, at some point, I'm going to find a reason to start drinking again, you know, and I might not even realize that it's coming up. And that's the beautiful thing about when I go further into this book, it tells me like I have a daily reprieve contingent upon my spiritual maintenance, you know, and even that when I read that, I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? And just like last year, I can see, you know, I was running off self-knowledge, I was running off just resting on my laurels and things got weird, you know, but the beautiful thing is like the book tells me at any point, you know, my God does not make the terms too hard. I can start taking these actions and things can start changing for me. And I'm so grateful for that. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Ethan.
Thank you. But we're at section 3 from page 24. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice. And our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. Gail?
Yeah. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. This paragraph is in italics, and my sponsor told me that when this book was printed, it cost more to print words in italics. So that means... And they didn't have a lot of money to spend on printing this book. So if they spent the money, I better pay attention. Again, when I get to this paragraph, what's coming to mind is towards the end of my drinking, I was living in a house with my adult children, one of them was almost an adult. And it was trash day, and my son came to gather the trash, to take the trash out. And there was a lawn bag in my room. And I told myself that I couldn't have a problem with alcohol because I didn't bother anybody. I stayed in my room. I didn't drink and drive. So I thought if you had a nap and then took a drive, that you weren't drinking and driving. I really, really honestly believe that.
Oh, yeah.
that you were sober after a nap, right? But he came in and he gathered up the trash and he picked up that lawn bag and it was just clang, 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 clang. And he was like, Mom. And I said, oh, you know, I was, you know, clean up. That's from, you know, weeks or whatever. And it wasn't. And then I, you know, laid back down to go back to sleep. And he came back up in the room and he like ripped the covers off and he was like, 21 bottles, mom, 21 bottles. And I begged and I pleaded and, you know, I promised and I meant it. Like I was so tired by that point of hurting my children, the pain of hurting them. And I didn't want to hurt them anymore. And I promise I will not do this again. I will get help, whatever it takes. I promise. I promise. And I meant it. And I meant it. And it says, we are unable at certain times to bring in our consciousness with sufficient force, the memory or suffering or promises, humiliation of the same day. The same day. It was like my car drove itself. I never thought about the promise that I had made to him. It didn't even come to my consciousness. You know, we hear all the time, play the tape forward, play the tape backward. And yes, that is a great tool to use. But if I be a real alcoholic, there's going to be a time where I am without defense against the first drink. I can't think of the consequences. And I thought to remind me, like, I didn't have a home. I didn't have a car. I was unemployable. But the insanity of in my mind, I couldn't see that. I was so justified. You know, I was selling my belongings on Facebook Marketplace and calling it survival. Right. And I was such a victim. It wasn't my fault that I didn't have a place to live. It wasn't my fault that I didn't have a job. It was somebody else's fault. So I couldn't even see, you know, that, you know, and so when you guys were talking about unmanageability, I was equating that to consequences, but I didn't have a DUI. Right. And I'm still alive. But for me today, the unmanageability is I cannot manage my thoughts, feelings, emotions, reactions, and sometimes actions. I have to have a power greater than myself. I have this three-ring circus going on inside of me. I have these layers and layers of conversations. You know, if he would have said this, then I would have said that. If she would have done this, then I would have done that. And back in 1991, if he would have said that, then I definitely would have done that. And in 2020, 29, when, you know, my daughter gets married or my son, this, whatever, like, and it's just layers and layers. And it's like this roaring. And the only way that I could quiet that is with oblivion. And I have to have something to quiet that. And that's exactly what this program has done for me. And you said something too about seeing that, that book, and it was the only book, you know, for a week. Not this one, but the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous was in my side table drawer for 25 years. For 25 years, I slept with this book right here in the drawer. And I would get it out every once in a while with my glass of wine, and I would open it up and try to figure out what was wrong with him. It never, like, the answer to all of my problems, the roadmap to this power, this roadmap to infinite love and power is right here. I just have to follow the directions, but I have to have a sponsor to do that. When I came in the first time, when I went to detox that first time, there were 9 of us in there and I wasn't like them. And I was the only one that was in there for the first time. Everybody else, it was like their third, fourth, fifth time. And I was like, why would you ever come back here? So it was the second time that the psychiatric nurse, I said, I'm afraid if I go home, because to quiet that, I couldn't quiet that. I couldn't stop hurting my children. And so my solution, my way out, was to kill myself. Mm-hmm. And the paramedics, somebody found me, paramedics came, and I ended up in detox, the same one again. And that was when the psychiatric nurse suggested that I needed a 12-step program. And she said that it was Alcoholics Anonymous was free. And I was like, oh, I like a bargain. Because I was thinking I was going to have to go to someplace expensive. And and you guys were talking this, like, but I didn't want to stop drinking. I didn't think I was like you guys yet. So I went to a lot of meet, not a lot, I'm lying. I went to some meetings, but I went wasted because I didn't understand what was wrong with me. So it took a couple of years of going to meetings here and there, and until I finally, the only way out was to kill myself. And then I went to my first meeting in July of 2017 without any alcohol in my system. And the first time I heard you guys talk about what you feel like, what you think, how you feel, and how you drink. And I was like, oh my God, this is what's been wrong with me my whole life. And I didn't understand when you guys were talking about spiritual awakening and this is a process and stuff like that. I had no idea what you were talking about. It was like you were talking Japanese, but I felt the love and I felt the happiness and I wanted what you had. And so after a lot of white chips, I finally did the work. Pass.
Thank you. For me, I mean, literally like these paragraphs, like that one in italics is just what I was just sharing about. This was the paragraph that I was thinking about. And the funny thing is, once again, when I'm reading this in jail, like, and I'm referencing jail so much because that was the first time I read these paragraphs, you know. And the funny thing is, by this point, by the time I'm in, there's a solution. I'm pissed off because like I'm thinking like they're going to tell me like what's wrong with me. And they just tell me that I'm more fucked, you know, and I can relate to that. I'm more fucked. And I can remember sitting in jail and just like putting this book down at about at the next on the next page and just being like, I just want to go to that bar that I was just talking about. Can't wait to go to jail and just get real good and drunk. You know, I'm going. And once again, like I literally just read that, you know, I have no defense against the first drink, you know, that I can't remember, you know, a week or a month ago, that humiliation of a week or a month ago, the jail that I'm sitting in that I was saying, like, I can't wait to go to so I can just dry out. Now I'm sitting in this jail reading this book. Upset because I'm so scared because this book is telling us, you know, and I can remember already going to a couple meetings before I went into jail and hearing people. And then now I get to, there's a solution. Like, it's going to tell me how to fix myself. Nope. It just tells me once again, you know, especially because I'm looking for, you know, the answers. But once again, I'm not looking for the spiritual, you know, the spiritual toolkit or any of that because I have no idea what it is. All I'm hearing and seeing are the things that I can relate with, and it's that I'm fucked. You know, and I put the book down. Like, I didn't put the book down. I threw the book and I was sitting in my cell. I'm like, I can't do this. When I get out of here, I'm walking to the bar that's literally walking distance from the jail that I don't have to pay a tab at, and I'm going to get real good and drunk. But thankfully, I still had another week and a half or so to dry out a little bit more. And I picked this book up again and I ended up meeting other people once I got moved to the general block in the program. You know, I wasn't able to go to a meeting in the program, but there's someone in my block that went to a meeting and would sit there and read it. But that last paragraph talking about, you know, there's complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a. When I read that, I was just like, and this is just me, like I could relate to that so much because I've worked in the kitchens for like close to 10 years. And I can remember at my first job, literally touching pans, looking at them like that pan's going to be hot, but you know what? I'll be able to do it. And I'll like touch it, be like, hey, it's a little hot, but I would still grab the pan, even though I know it's hot, and I'd burn the shit out of my hand every single time. There are so many times I'd look at it like that pan's going to be hot. There's a towel right there, but you know what? I can do it. So when I read that, once again, like that has nothing to do with my drinking, but it has everything to do with my thinking. You know, the way that my brain's wired, it's going to be different this time, Ethan, you know, and I can remember just reading that. And that was one of the things I'm like, oh gosh, like there's something seriously wrong with me. And I have no idea still, because I was only like a few days sober, you know, reading this in jail. I'm like, still had no idea what was going on. And I, like I said, I was so upset. And all I wanted to do is I could not wait. Now I cannot wait to leave jail so I can go to that bar that I could not wait to go into jail. Like just that mental obsession, just I'm fucked. You know, and I'm so glad this program is the way that it is, because the further I read in the book, the more hope that I started to find. You know, once I got out of jail, I did check myself into an IOP as well, too. And I argued with how my life wasn't unmanageable and how I wasn't powerless, even though I'm literally like just getting out of jail. But I ended up finding that sponsor that was willing to take me through this book. You know, I ended up taking the steps, you know, I ended up having that spiritual experience. I ended up learning what my real issue is, because alcohol is just but a symptom. You know, if alcohol was my real problem, I could have just stopped drinking. I could have gone to jail, everything. I could have dried out and I could have gotten out and everything would have been, But the issue is, like, I'm a real alcoholic and my problems got worse even as I'm sitting in jail. Pass.
Thanks, Ethan.
Section 4 from page 30. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently may be, has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better.
Thank you. Oh, there's so much. the delusion. We hear a lot about denial. For me, for so many years, it was that delusion. I lived in the land of rationalization and justification, the land of make-believe. And I was a victim. And everything that I did was for the good of my children, for the good of other people. It was all selfishness and self-centeredness. I couldn't see that. I thought myself, either it says the delusion that we are like other people. I thought myself better than or less than. But when it came to, again, that the alcohol, like I had an idea of what an alcoholic was and what he looked like and how he acted. And that could not be me. So it never occurred to me that that could be my problem. But the evidence of the repeated, pitiful, and incomprehensible demoralization over and over and over again, and that I just needed to get a grip. I had no idea, how sick I was. In that, putting your hand on the hot stove, and we learn that we're insane. And no wonder I lived in delusion. I lived in insanity. How could my insane mind understand that it was insane? So for me, I ended up having what I now refer to as a step one experience. I was going to meetings. I was calling my sponsor. I was doing the best that I could for a year. We kept picking up white chips. And I thought that every time I picked up a white chip, that I was making a choice to drink. I thought every time that I relapsed and I hadn't been through the steps, right? Like I thought that I was just saying F it. I had this, what I now know is a spiritual sickness. I had this emotional and spiritual pain that was so great. The only relief that I knew how to get, well, I had a couple of ways: blaming, lashing out, arguing, stealing, lying. Those gave me some relief, but nothing gave me relief like alcohol did. I like to get another job too. That was one thing that would give me relief. So my first year in Alcoholics Anonymous, I had 7 different jobs and I had 7 different sponsors, because every time that I thought I was choosing to pick up a drink, I would, get another job and get another sponsor, because something like, she was crazy and she didn't do it right or whatever. I would just run. It wasn't until, and remember I told you I understood the allergy. So I had gone 8.5 months without putting alcohol in my system. And I was going to meetings and I was calling my sponsor. In fact, the day that I drank, I hadn't had alcohol in my system, like I said, for 8.5 months. I went to 3 meetings that day. I went to lunch with the ladies afterwards. I did not understand that I had didn't have a choice, that I was insane. I didn't understand. I was incapable of being rigorously honest with another human being. I had no vocabulary for I'm afraid, I'm jealous, I'm angry. Like I was describing, I had that three ring circus going on, but I would call my sponsor and all I needed that love and connection so desperately that all I could tolerate is for her to tell me that you're being a good AA girl. So I'd say I'd call her at our appointed time and, you know, give her my checklist. You know, I went to a meeting, I called three women, I read my big book, check, check, check. I had not, like I said, I did not have the capability to say, I don't know what's going on, but I am feeling scared, anxious. I just needed her to say, good job. And I didn't know until about 10 o'clock that night, the idea, just the thought came, you need a drink. And I called her and I told her. That was probably one of the first times that I had been honest with her. And she said, well, you need to get to a meeting. Well, that gave me no relief, right? And so I did. I went to a meeting and I stood outside and there were some scary looking dudes. It was in downtown Charlotte and there were some scary looking dudes standing outside and I was too scared. I didn't know that those guys were there to save my life. Right. I was the person that came late and left early. I had not gone all the way through the steps. I had not had a spiritual awakening. I had not made conscious contact with God. I did not want to drink. I did not want to drink that night. I had to drink. The only choice I had was to drink. And that's when the next day, now I know by the grace of God that I made it to a meeting and I was terrified because remember, I know about the allergy. I had been in the rooms long enough to know that I had triggered the allergy and I could wake up in jail. They weren't stories anymore. I'd seen people come in and 2 weeks later get their first DUI. I had seen people come in and go back out. And I thought they were choosing to go back out. I didn't know that I have no choice. But it was after that, that I picked up that white chip, hopefully for the last time, and I fully surrendered. I didn't know that that's what I was doing, but I had no shame. I fully understood that, like, it was like something had taken over me and I knew I needed you guys' help. And that's when I finally got willing enough to listen and to follow directions. And then it happened, the spiritual awakening, but passed.
Thank you. That first paragraph that we read really just hits home. I mean, even just that first sentence, most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he's bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it's not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow someday we will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. For me, like, I don't really remember reading that one in jail. I know I did, and I probably was just as upset and just scared, even more scared, because, like I said, I came into these rooms thinking, like, these people are going to show me how to, like, drink responsibly. I didn't even know that. I didn't want to drink responsibly. I wanted to drink no consequence. I wanted to be able to get nice and just drunk and high and just be okay, like how it used to be. You know, I wanted the solution again through drugs and alcohol. But the thing is, I'd crossed that line, you know, and that was part of my great obsession, is that one day it'll be dead, you know. And the funny thing is, what I do remember about reading this chapter and these free fair paragraphs was reading it with my sponsor and another gentleman. And we're reading it, and at this point, I'm like 2 months sober. And I am pretty convinced that I'm a real alcoholic, you know. And we got to it and he's like, Ethan, are you a real alcoholic? He's like, yeah, I would say so. And then he, you know, that last paragraph, you know, like, or the paragraph in the middle, we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we're like other people or presently may be has to be smashed. And he's like, Ethan, like, are you a real alcoholic? I'm like, yes. Like, can you smash the delusion that you'll ever not be a real alcoholic? I was like, well, There's always a well, because the thing is, when I was in jail, this gentleman told me that I can drink normally once I'm older. He's like, yeah, just go to AA. Everything will be good. You know, like, that's what I did. You know, he's like, when you're like 35, like, you'll be able to have a couple beers, you know, like, take the load off. And the thing is, like, once again, what a wonderful, like, what a wonderful thing, because I came into these rooms at 23 years old, so scared that my life was done. I was never going to be able to have fun. It was just going to be so boring. It was going to be awful. And when that gentleman told me that, like, it kind of gave me some hope. It was false hope. You know, let me preface that right now. It's false hope. But the beautiful thing about how this program is, and the men that I found that took me through this book, and, you know, the gentleman that did take me through this book, when I told him, I was like, well, and he just looked at me, and I said, this man in jail, and he's looked at me, and he's like, okay, what do you got to say? He let me explain it. And he's like, he didn't say like, no, like, you can't do that. He was wrong. He let me make my own decision. He let me come to my own decision. And he's like, so Ethan, you think like the man in jail is maybe not the best person to take like suggestions from? I'm like, and once again, I'm like, you know, like, I get what you're saying, man, but like, this man, he wasn't in jail because of his drinking. He's like, well, he was, once again, he's not sitting there arguing with me. He's like, what was he in jail for? I was like, he was a habitual offender. You know, he didn't have a license, you know, and he's, my sponsor's like, Ethan, you maybe want to, you know, just maybe assume it was partially because of his drinking. I'm like, all right, man, like, I know where you're going. I get it. But once again, like, by that point, I'm like, I'm a real alcoholic, you know, like, I am convinced, like, I'm a real alcoholic. And I was holding on to that idea because I was so scared. Like I said, 23 years old, coming into these rooms, not knowing what these rooms really have to offer me. And I'm so scared. I'm never going to be able to go to concerts, out with my friends. I'm never just going to have fun again, you know, because that was the only time I thought I was having fun, was when I was drinking. And so holding on to that idea was just like keeping me in these rooms. But once me and my sponsor talked about it, and I had more knowledge through going through this book with him, I was like, all right, I get what you're saying. Like, yeah, like, if I'm a real alcoholic, I probably can't drink like a normal person, you know? And that was it. Like, that was really it. He's like, cool. Like, let's keep on going. I'm like, wait, what? He's like, let's just keep on going. And the funny thing is too, like, that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization came shortly at, once again, in sobriety, because all I was doing was just sitting in meetings. I was going to like 6 or 7 meetings a day for my first 90 days. I was going to so many fucking meetings, and I wasn't hearing, you know, what I need to do. I was just hearing, just keep coming back, put the plug in the jug. And I'm like wondering, like, what is wrong? You know, I'm going to all these meetings. And for me, like, I needed that. It helped me. It's not to say like, don't go to meetings. Like, but for me, it got to a point like, what is there left to do? Because at 3 months sober, I'm like sitting on my back porch, upset, you know, just as miserable as I was when I was drinking, you know. And I've convinced myself by going to all these meetings, like, to drink is to die. But the thing is, though, I want to die. So because I want to drink, but I know if like to drink is to die, it's just this hamster wheel. And I'm like so miserable. And the next day, like, I wish I could say the next morning I called my sponsor immediately. No, like, the next morning, I just like sat in my stuff and waited until I was going to work, and I only had 30 minutes to talk to my sponsor. And I told him how miserable I was feeling, and I asked him, what can I do? Because at this point we were in How It Works, and we were talking about my inventory. And he's just like, the steps, stupid. Like, because I'm asking, like, what is it? Like, what do I need to do? He's like, just do the steps, you know, take the steps, see what happens. But for me, you know, like, this mental obsession was telling me that, you know, like, I didn't have step 2 down good, or 3 or whatever. And I missed so much, and that I was scared that I wasn't going to do AA right. Even though, once again, like, there's so much that I read that I don't have to do AA right. I just need to do AA, you know? And he just like, Ethan, like, just move forward in the steps, see what happens. If it doesn't help, just start drinking. Like, what? And at that point, like, I was just in that pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization again, 3 months of, you know, wanting help and not really wanting to do it, you know, until it was just put in front of me, like, let's make a decision, move forward. And that's what I did, and I'm so grateful for that.
Thank you both. All right, this will be our last section of reading for the night, from page 41. As soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink, as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. Now I remember what my alcoholic friends told me, how they prophesied that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come, I would drink again. They had said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. But just that did happen and more, for what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew that from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow. And then from page 43, once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. Yeah.
Thank you. No power to choose. The most insane thing I do sober, and that is pick up that first drink. I've just, you know, thinking about again that night where I did not want to drink, and I went to three meetings and I called my sponsor and I went to lunch with the ladies. No human power. I had not gone all the way through the steps. I had not made conscious contact with a power that was going to keep me away from a drink. And I know that I was trying to figure out what that was. You know, I was trying to define what that was. Those strange mental blank spots, the strange mental twists, again, that was what took me the longest to understand. And again, like the most insane thing I do sober, no human power. That night, when I left the that meeting, I didn't go in. Again, I'd been to three meetings earlier that day, and I wasn't thinking about drinking when I was in those meetings. I was just feeling restless, irritable, and discontent. And I like what, you know, I was told, you know, go to meetings. I didn't understand, you know, unless and until I go through all the steps, all 12 steps, and have that complete psychic change, that I'm always going to pick up a drink. I left that meeting. I didn't go in, and I went to, it was called the QT, the Quick Trip. It's a convenience store. And I was standing in front of the line, and and there was like this war going on inside of me. Like I didn't want to drink. And this woman walked in from my home group, from my, what I called my home group. I had no service position. I came late. I left early. I would stand, you know, they would say, you know, get with stuff. You didn't get a chance to share, you know, get with somebody. And I knew that I needed to do that, but I was so uncomfortable. You know, I would just stand there, and it felt like everybody had somebody to talk to but me. And then I would run to my car. And so that night in the QT, there was a woman from my home group. She walked in, and I was staring at the wine, and we made eye contact. I'd never spoken to her. She had never spoken to me. She'd probably given me her phone number, but, you know, I sent her a friend request on Facebook, but I never called her, you know, and I would do that. And then I would see, you know, AAs like doing fun things together. And I'd be like, oh, they didn't invite me, you know, but I had never called them. And I left. You know, I left without a bottle of wine, and I gripped my steering wheel in the car. And I was just like, I knew that that was God. Like, I knew that that was a power greater than me that sent her to that. And I was just saying, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And my car drove itself to the gas station, and I walked in. And this is 11:30 at night. And I walked into that store, and I grabbed the little 4-pack, and I put it on the counter. And I'm just like, just get it and go. And don't you know, a dude from another meeting that I go to walked in, made eye contact with me. And I just looked down. I had to drink. I had no choice but to drink. I didn't want to, and I had to. It was a crushing blow. I'll pass.
For me, I mean, I feel like I've talked a lot about just what was just read. And I guess for me, the biggest one is just the fact that, like what I said, like 3 months sober, you know, like I was fully convinced that I was a real alcoholic, you know, but still 3 months sober, I was so desperate. And, you know, the only thing that I thought was just, I want to drink, but I know I can't drink. I'm going to die if I drink. But at the same time, if I drink, I was so scared of it. And I was just so desperate, you know, and I had no idea what to do. But the thing is, like, even in that moment, I remember talking to one of my friends that wasn't in the program. You know, I remember, you know, praying to something that at the time I still didn't believe in. You know, and then that last paragraph we read, once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink, except in few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power, you know, and that was like, because I've thought about like, why was I able to, you know, like not drink that night? But that was the thing, like, it wasn't me, like I prayed, even was as simple as like, just please help me. You know, and I've had that experience, you know, even since taking the steps, like what I said, you know, the book tells me I have a daily reprieve contingent upon my spiritual maintenance. You know, when I let up on these, on the spiritual program of action, you know, I'm headed for trouble. And, you know, like last January, that's exactly where I was at. And I felt like I had no defense against alcohol because my life was crumbling and I was so disconnected from my higher power and from AA. And one of the things, like, I didn't even really want to drink. I just didn't want to feel anymore. I was so desperate. I was just did not want to feel anything that I was feeling. And my first thought was just like, I know what will bring me a little bit of ease and comfort right now. And my first thought was sitting at my job, you know, like 2.5 years sober. And immediately I'm like, that's what I'm going to do. It wasn't like fuck it or anything or planning it out. It was just like, I think that's what I'm going to do because I was so desperate and I had no defense. But the beautiful thing is, like what I said, like this book, it tells me at any moment I can turn my at whatever it is I'm going through over to my God is always there and does not make the terms hard. And all I did was just took a moment to pause and I prayed. I literally just said, like, please help me. Like, I'm so fucking desperate. Please help me. And for whatever reason, the thought to call another alcoholic popped in my head. I was like, well, fuck it. Because once again, you know, the book tells me faith without works is dead. So if I have that faith, it's all great. But then I have to put in that action. And I put in that action after I said that simple prayer. I called another alcoholic. It got me through that day. And then another alcoholic that I had not talked to in weeks. That was 3 days sober was telling me how desperate he was. And I didn't tell him, you need to do this or you need to do that. I just had the opportunity to talk to him and share about how. And by the end of it, I was like, this shit fucking works, you know, like this shit is fucking amazing. You know, that thought to drink was not there anymore. I was still fucking desperate. I was still hurting. But the thing is, though, it just threw me back, just catapulted me back into this program and showed me how important it is for me to not forget that. Yes, like I have a mental obsession that when I let up on my spiritual program of action, it comes back. You know, at any moment, you know, it's not like my, you know, like disease is outside doing push-ups. But the thing is, at any moment, if I just stop doing this shit, it's going to come back. You know, it's going to come back because it's always there. But every single day, if I just turn my shit over and I'm constantly doing this stuff, the way that the book tells me to, like, I don't have to, you know, I don't have to look over my shoulder. Like, is today going to be the day? You know, I'm going to stub my toe and like, I can just go on with my life and have a beautiful life. You know, because other things came up last year that were way worse than the first things. And the thought to drink never came into my head because I was in the middle of AA. And even that showed me how important it is to be in the middle of AA. And I'm so grateful for that. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Ethan.
All right. At this point, we'll pass the seven tradition basket. The seven tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contribution. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup or central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. announcements. At this time, are there any AA-related announcements?
What's up, John?
We're in church at the Road of Charlottesville, Virginia.
All right, thanks, John. Any other announcements? All right, Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. I'll point out that literature over here on the side table is available. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you need literature. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. And you can also email us info@simpleactions.net. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Meeting after the meeting. All are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held at
Stella's,
right down Colonial. And in closing, thank you to all that have participated. And after the Lord's Prayer, everybody will have a chance to say thank you in person to Ethan and Gail. But please thank our panel this evening.
If you'd like to
thank you, Gail.
Well, I'd not ask Travis to read the last two paragraphs from page 164.
Hey, Travis. Our book is meant God will come as more to you and ask him again. But obviously, see to it that you're abandoning yourselves to God. Admit your fault. Clear away the record of your past. You believe, give freely. We shall be with you in the fellowship. We'll see you. Some of you in the front of the road. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Great. Thanks, Travis. All right, we'll close the meeting. Let's circle up. Who keeps us sober?
Our Father, Lord in heaven, our kingdom come, our will be done. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, and as we forgive those who trespass against us, and lead us not into temptation. And deliver us from evil, for thine is the kingdom, the power, and the forever. Yeah.